Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, this is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas on Friday, May the 6th, and today we're going to catch up with our friend Michael Bargo up in Chicago. The big topic, of course, right now in the country is Roe v. Wade and abortion. As you probably know, a leak of a draft, I'm not sure exactly where in the development that draft was, whether that was the last draft or the second, you know, we don't know that kind of information, but nevertheless, a leak or a draft was leaked, and that, of course, has created quite a controversy. But it isn't just the leaking itself, which was very bad, at least not something you associate with the more serious Supreme Court law clerks or whatever. But I think it's that some of the other stuff, some of the reaction. You know, when you think about churches, as in my case, I work as an usher, and this Sunday we're concerned about potential violence against our Catholic church. So that's our parish. So that's where we are. That's where we are at this moment. And to chat with us a little bit about all of this is our friend Michael Bargo. Let me say hello to Michael. How are you, Michael?
I'm doing great. It's good to talk to you again, Silvio.
My pleasure, my pleasure. You know, I know you've been on the show many times, but I always liked for the guests to just do a quick biography of themselves or just tell us a little bit about what you're up to. So give us a little story of Michael Bargo.
Well, as you know, we met when I was writing a lot for American Thinker. Since those years, I've moved over more toward filing cases in the Supreme Court. So just by coincidence, for over a year now, I've been researching abortion, and I found some remarkable things that nobody knows about the Supreme Court abortion rulings, and I'll discuss those with you in a second. The other case I'm wrapping up now, I'm just about sending it to the Supreme Court, is Illinois has a lot of rules and a state legislature that give the speaker complete power over all the votes of the residents in Illinois, and that's a very new case, and that case is getting a lot of – I've had to file it into the lower federal courts first, and that case has gotten a huge amount of attention, and it's very original. So are my observations on abortion, which are shocking, which we can discuss here in a minute. So things are going great. I'm being very, very busy, and the main thing I find when I look into these issues is I find things that shockingly – nobody else has ever seen, and they're just in plain English and plain print. Nobody bothers to look up these cases and see what they're about.
Yeah, interesting. We'll hear about that in a little bit. Well, let's talk about the current events. I mean, the stuff that is on the front pages, and that's, of course, the leak and Roe v. Wade and the reaction of some people to Roe v. Wade, the crazy hysterical reaction from some corners to this leak. First of all, just the leak itself. I'm not an expert on the Supreme Court, but I understand this is the first time that an actual draft like this has been leaked. And so just, again, just thinking out loud, we don't know who did it, but who do you think did it? I mean, what came to your mind when you heard about this? Is there any... Not necessarily a person, but who do you think did it? You think somebody – because there's two arguments, as you know, and I'd like to hear yours. There's two arguments. There's one argument that says this came from a frustrated, let's say, law clerk for one of the three liberals. And then the other argument says this came from somebody on – and one of the six, let's say, other justices who was maybe just getting it out there. So where do you think? I know it's speculation because nobody knows, but when you heard about the leak, what was your reaction, Michael?
My reaction was it was just like that phony street riot when back in 2016 when Donald Trump, the candidate, came to Chicago, and he's at Circle Campus, you know, near downtown, and they had a big phony riot, and they shut down his campus appearance in the auditorium there by making a lot of noise and rioting and all that stuff. It's just another stunt. That's my appearance. The clerks are incredibly serious, and they're very intelligent people, very hardworking people. I don't imagine them doing it, and I can't imagine a Supreme Court justice doing it. But if I had to make a judgment, I would say it's more likely associated with the clerks.
Okay. So that's an interesting point you're making because you don't think, or again, we're speculating. I want to make sure everybody understands that. We're speculating. This is like, you know, looking for the criminal and you know, nobody knows. So we're
right.
Doing a little detective work here, a little Sherlock Holmes
right.
kind of work. So we were speculating. I want to make sure everybody understands that. But the reason that I thought it may be a law clerk is because, as I understand the way the Supreme Court works, there's very few people who get to touch these documents or even get to move them from one place to another. I mean, these are very confidential documents. So who else outside of a law clerk would have access to this, Michael?
Well, the way I think about it, the way I instantly thought about it was a publicity stunt, and it was just being outrageous. It's just trying to throw a monkey wrench into our political American political scene, because in reality, I filed in the federal courts over 30 times. I have 3 cases in the Supreme Court on permanent file right now, and I have 3 more I'm wrapping up. These are very, very serious people, and the main thing is it doesn't make any difference to the justices or the case if somebody leaks it or not, because they couldn't care less. They're incredibly intelligent, well-educated, and serious people. The whole reason is this is just done to get on the news. This is just done as a news-making event. That's all it's for, and all it is to throw a monkey wrench into things. And it's just like the riots in the 30 cities and the breaking of windows and the calling off the police in the big cities that are all mostly run by Democrats. Our Mayor Lightfoot allowed people to smash windows and steal, you know, expensive clothes off of the Magnificent Mile. It's the same reason Mayor Lightfoot allows chaos to run and to be very offensive to a hardworking police. It's just done for a political effect. It's done to make it look like there's change in the air, even though there isn't. And if anything, this country is more conservative than it was before Donald Trump. And that really scared the Democrat Party, who are a group of people. They do what they want. I'm sure if Nancy Pelosi knew about this and knows about it, maybe Schumer and the DNC, the people who run that, maybe someday we will find out. One of them will turn honest, and we'll find out, you know, how they planned all these things over, the last 2.5 years since the Minnesota, that guy who was shot. And they use that as an excuse to start a bunch of rioting.
Right.
This is just it's just a stunt.
Yeah. Well, and I think what your theory is very interesting, because if you remember, as soon as it was out there, you had a bunch of people demonstrating in front of the White House. I mean, not the White House, but the Supreme Court building. So,
right.
I mean, they leak it at 8 o'clock, and at 5 minutes after 8, there's a bunch of people outside the Supreme Court building
right.
with placards, you know, almost
right.
as if
it's
they
all choreographed.
A little bit too organized. I guess that's what I'm trying to say, Michael.
No, you are exactly right. This is just something the Democrats do now, because they see that they've been treating minorities horribly, that the minorities are getting tired of having horrible school systems, of having no police security. They're having no job opportunities until Donald Trump, he actually increased the employment rate for blacks. And that really scared the Republicans a lot. And Trump is, he grew the economy. He's putting more money in people's pockets. He wants them to be better educated. They can't stand this. Democrats basically are control freaks. They're totalitarian. And they've been that way since the FDR. And nobody has noticed it until Donald Trump comes along, and he's such a good president. He's seen as a troublemaker. Democrats
right.
love to control people. Don't forget they're the party of controlling slaves.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting, just to back up what you just said, if you remember in the 2020 State of the Union message, when Donald Trump, I guess his last State of the Union message as president, when he was talking about the economy and he spoke about the black unemployment rate, which is one of the Hispanic unemployment rate, those two things are great success stories. I mean, everybody
right.
should come to their feet and stand up for that. And yet,
right.
you know, if you remember, the camera was going around, you know, the chamber there, and the black representatives wouldn't stand up. The Hispanic representatives wouldn't stand up. So clearly there's something to what you're saying, that they're afraid of Donald Trump's success. But I also think, Michael, and I don't want to get off the topic of abortion too much, but I think they're scared to death, meaning the Democrats,
yeah.
because what's happening, another reason why I think all of this, what I would call a totally, completely hysterical overreaction to Roe v. Wade on the part of the left, I think the real problem, the way I look at it, is that you've got a Biden presidency who has lost all the Republican votes. They've lost the independents, and now they're down to the Democrats. So roughly they've got about 33% of the public with them, the Democrats. So it's tough to compete when you're giving away over half of the electorate. And I think that's why they're panicking, and they're using many of these tactics to somehow motivate the younger people and the younger women that we saw in those demonstrations. But
right.
it's not going to work, in my opinion, because I think people
no. –
I don't think the fair-minded Americans are going to sit there and say, you know, hey, this is great. This is great. These people are threatening to publish the residences of the Supreme Court justices. They're threatening to attack churches this Sunday. I think most fair-minded Americans look at that and they go, I don't want any part of this. These people are crazy, Michael.
Well, the reason they are still doing these outrageous tactics is very clear to me. It's because the Democrat Party is still run by a bunch of old Democrats who remember the race riots of the 60s where they abused a lot of hardworking black people. And they remember, they took control over the four public unions. This all started under FDR. Roosevelt was the one who started the four public sector unions, which are technically not even legal. And he had control over all the biggest cities of the country, from Boston, New York, Newark, Philadelphia, Chicago, St. Louis, all the way to Los Angeles and Portland, and that was how they controlled all the politics. Now this stuff is changing, and we also, don't forget, we also have a much more educated set of voters. We have the internet now where people can learn things. We have news like Fox News for the last 30 years. We have people who are educating people, and this makes it easier for us to see that all throughout the 60s, when we had Walter Cronkite and all those people were all reading from the Democrat Party playbook, because New York controlled all the television stations, and New York was a Democrat-run city. And nobody ever realized how much control the Democrats really had. I write about this on Facebook all the time, but people never even think about it and never read about it. And until
yeah.
Chicago was only 2% black, Chicago schools were only 2% black in 1900. Today they're like half of about 40% black.
Hmm. Let me ask you one. Go ahead and finish, because I wanted to bring up another point.
Yeah,
go
you have to look, when
point.
You look at the history of it, there's two things going on here. The country is changing, number one. And secondly, the reason we have these phony stunts like the release of the draft of the Supreme Court ruling, which really doesn't mean anything, is that the old Democrats like Pelosi and Schumer, they still think these tactics work because when they were got into politics in the 60s, those are the tactics that they used to bring their power together and keep their control of the
people. Yeah. Well, I think it's going to blow up in their faces if it's not already blowing up in their faces. But let me ask you another question before we take a break. A lot of people are saying that this is hurting or this is poisoning the court. I mean, really devastated to the Supreme Court, because a lot of these justices obviously work together. And from what I understand, they get along well, even though they have different points of view. They get along well, that there's a professional atmosphere within the walls of the Supreme Court. And everybody that I've heard who has worked as a law clerk has said the same thing, that even there may be differences among these people, but they are, you know, they're serious and they're professional and whatever they believe. And a lot of people are talking about the damage that this is doing to the court. So do you think that this is going to damage the court? Okay. So
no,
you think the damage is already done?
No, I think that the news medias are mostly run by Democrats, and they want people to think it's damaging the court. Because don't forget, Joe Biden actually came out and said, I'm going to pack the court and stuff it with liberals. The Democrats are the ones who want to upset the court. If someone releases a draft of a ruling, I can assure you it is probably so detailed and technical, because I read these things all the time. I've read every abortion case. I study how these things are done. They're very, very serious people. The justices themselves are not affected by this, and it's not going to affect the court. The news media wants everyone to think it's going to affect the court because they've wanted to upset the Supreme Court apple cart since Joe Biden ran in 2020. Remember that?
Yes.
He said, I'm going to pack the court with people. He's the one who started giving this impression.
Right. Well, let me ask you, this is chapter two.
That's all.
Right. Now,
this is just chapter
one more
two,
point.
This is another stunt.
Yeah. Let me make another point about this, and then we'll take a break, because one of the things that surprises me in the reaction of many people to the leak, or at least maybe not so much the leak, but the possibility of Roe being overturned. One of the things that amazes me is how people are reacting to this as if somehow it's a shock that Roe would be overturned. And I've been following politics for a while, and I've always felt that we were going in the direction of overturning Roe v. Wade. And when you take a look at the appointments that President Trump made, In the last three appointments that he made, you know, clearly we were stacking the court, and I don't say stacking is not the right word, but clearly we were putting people in the court who had a interpretation of the Constitution that said that abortion belongs in the states, in the federal government, that abortion should have never been decided by the federal court, that it should have been decided by state legislatures, as we are doing in Texas with our abortion law, as they're doing in Mississippi with theirs, as they're doing in Oklahoma, as they are doing in different places. So anybody who didn't see this is not living,
right.
Somehow is living in the twilight zone. Because I'm not
right.
surprised at all. I mean, let's put the leak aside. Let's just put the leak aside for a second. If the court had come out, let's say a month from now in June, and issued an opinion overturning Roe v. Wade, I would not have been surprised at all by that, for the simple reason that every signal coming out of this court since the Texas law last September has been that their inclination to overturn Roe v. Wade. I mean, if you remember, the Texas law went into effect on September the 1st. For people who don't know what I mean by the Texas law simply says that if the doctor detects a heartbeat, there cannot be an abortion. So when you go into the clinic, the doctor has to prove that there is no heartbeat. If there is a heartbeat, the abortion cannot be done. That decision went into effect, or that law went into effect on September 1st, 2021. There have been like a dozen challenges to that law. Three or four have actually gone to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court has not taken up the challenge. So what that said to me, Michael, all along, is that we were headed in the direction of overturning Roe v. Wade. They were just looking, I mean, the court right. was looking for the case. Mississippi turned out to be the case. But that's what it said to me. So anybody surprised has been living in another planet, Michael. Forgive my long-winded speech, but
right.
no one should be surprised that this ruling could happen.
Well, not only that, but you are absolutely correct. Actually, I think the Supreme Court is very, very reluctant to admit it makes mistakes. They didn't do enough to overcome the discrimination of blacks after the Emancipation Proclamation. And they are here's what I'm getting at. Article 10 of the United States Constitution says anything that directly addressed by the Constitution, any power is not given to the federal government through the Constitution belong to the states. Abortion was never given to the federal government. Therefore, it already belonged to the states. The Supreme Court made several mistakes. I'll tell you another one in a second. So they should never even have ruled on abortion. And let me tell you one thing I wrote in my – I'm writing a federal case right now. I'm sending the federal court and to the Supreme Court because I'll be the one who sent it there. Listen to this, Sylvia. You're not going to believe it. But the Supreme Court allowed, in Roe v. Wade, allowed people to believe that a woman has a privacy right to choose to have an abortion. But the right to privacy does not exist in the United States Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, or the Bill of Rights. There's no such thing as a privacy right to do whatever you darn please. And the reason I bring this up is Roe v. Wade depends solely upon a privacy right, but get this, Silvio, it's even worse. But the Supreme Court never explained where the privacy right is mentioned in the Constitution or in its past cases. It never referred to any foundation for the privacy right. They just said it exists.
Right.
And that's unusual. They
right.
didn't ground it in any scholarship.
Well, that's it, and we're going to take a break right now, but I think you hit it out of the park with what you just said, that the Supreme Court invented a right of privacy in the U.S. Constitution to then turn around and invent the right to an abortion, which is incredible.
I'll add more in a second when we get back.
Yeah, let's take a break. We're talking with my friend Michael Bargo up in Chicago. Michael has been very active in writing about abortion and pursuing some legal options up there for quite some time, not just now. And when we come back, we'll get an update on some of the things that he's been doing with abortion and some of his own projects, very interesting stuff that he's been working on. So we're going to take a little break, and we'll come back with Michael right after this. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas. We're chatting with our good friend Michael Bargo, and we're going to get into a lot more with Michael, some of the projects up there that he's been working on. He's obviously been very busy over the last few years on this. But, Michael, let me just say one more thing. I want to make sure that I said it correctly. Please agree or disagree with me or correct me. I said that the Supreme Court back in 1973 invented a right of privacy that doesn't exist to then turn right. around and invent a right of abortion that doesn't exist. So for the last 50 right. years, what they called the law of the land was never really a law because it was not passed by a legislature. But we've been, you know, we've been operating on a phony opinion that has created all these. I mean, we create, and I think what many people, including, by the way, and this is extremely important, including, by the way, the late Justice Ginsburg, who passed away in 2020, as you know, she herself said many times that Roe v. Wade would have had a lot more legitimacy had it actually come from voters. So anyway, I just want to put out there, do you agree with what I said?
Exactly. You're 100% correct. And Justice Alito, too, said that, actually wrote in one of the many Supreme Court cases I read, he said that the court has nothing. The abortion is not under the purview of the Supreme Court. It's basically none of the Supreme Court's business.
Yeah. Now, Michael, but I think you're exactly right. But I think for the people in the left, you know, who you know, value Ruth Ginsburg, and, you know, I have nothing against the lady. She was a very capable judge. We disagree on cases, but she's a very capable judge. But the people who keep pointing to Ruth Ginsburg do not know what she wrote about Roe v. Wade or said many times about Roe v. Wade. She was always uncomfortable with the decision because I think she understood, like you do, that it was really sort of a crazy opinion, you know, again, based on a right that didn't exist to create another right that didn't exist. So I think, you know, I think you're right about that. Go ahead.
Not only that, but wait, I'm basically done with my abortion case, but wait till people hear what I have to say about abortion. Here's the whole deal. When does a woman, we know that a woman can become pregnant about 350 months or 400 months, an average healthy woman in her life. Now, a woman can only get pregnant for 100 hours of every month. You know, her egg has to be fertilized, but every human life starts when the woman's egg is fertilized by the man and who's involved. So the man's DNA is the controlling factor. It's the dispositive action. It's what starts everything. But Roe never. But you're not going to believe this, Silvio. I had to go back several times. I went back. I saved the PDF file, and I searched for the word father. The word father does not exist in the two oral arguments of Roe v. Wade, in the final ruling, about 150 pages, and none of the federal abortion cases I looked at, not a single one ever mentions the role of the father in a pregnancy. There's only state cases that say that the father involved is responsible for paying child care or child support, stuff like that. But with regard to respecting the life of a child, not only does the father have no role in it, the word father does not exist. I still can't get over it. I find that so astonishing.
Yes. Well, especially I think you and I know that fathers have something to do with pregnancies. I'm surprised that don't mention the word father because I think you and I had something to do with our children and how we created them. Well, give me a review of where you are. We've got about, you know, we have a few minutes left, but just kind of give me a review of where you are in your cases and, you know, as much as you can tell us, because I know sometimes, you know, you have restrictions as to what you can say publicly before the case is out there. But just give us a summary of where you are and, you know, feel free to bring us in.
It's really funny, but I must be doing something right because I inherit from my father. My mother was an absolute wonderful person, as virtually all mothers are. The older I get, the more I appreciate what an incredible person my mother was. And the more I appreciate how women, I actually heard that women have more, 30% more connective tissue between the emotional part of their brain and the thinking part. That's not a bad thing. That's a great thing. Because when I see women talk to their husbands or talk to their children, they pay attention first to how their child is feeling. And that's remarkable that women have that patience and that ability, and that's what makes women so much better at handling children in a family than a lot of men are. So there's that. That's one of the things I'm learning. As I get older and older, I appreciate women more and more, the incredible wisdom they have. And my mother was an amazing person. And so,
well, before you go on, I have to jump in for a second and say is that I second everything you've said, because, you know, with Mother's Day on Sunday, coming Sunday, and my mother passed away exactly, she passed away on May 12th last year. So she passed away a couple of days after Mother's Day, and a day after she turned 92. So this is going to be my first Mother's Day without my mother. And I tell you, I was so blessed with the mother I had, and so blessed, you know, with the wife that I have and the three sons that we have. And, of course, our two grandsons now and our daughter-in-law. And we've got another baby coming in late June from the other daughter-in-law. So I think I just want to second everything you've said about women, because I think you and I and most men are very lucky that we have women in our lives. So I just wanted to put that in, because you really got my attention when you were talking there about your mom, Michael.
Yeah, my mother was an amazing, amazing person, and so was my father. My father is far, far more perceptive about people than most men are. When I was growing up, if we'd go visit relatives and a couple had an argument and this and that, my father is of natural, very high aptitude towards psychology and philosophy. He wouldn't say, yeah, you know, Uncle Bob is, you know, he's like that, you know, he's just right. He would say he's not happy with his job. Or he's trying to do this and that. He would always try to understand the emotional makeup of the person and see where they're coming, understand where they're coming from, and not just say they're a big mouth and a jerk and he drinks too much he would never reject people outright. It's a Catholic attitude that you always understand people and you always are open-minded to forgiving them and helping them. You never just reject people outright. And that's what I, not only did I grow up in that family with my father being like that, but I've inherited his aptitude. The first book I wrote and published was a counseling book in psychology, an academic book, and it's used in colleges all around the country. So I have a very, very high aptitude and interest in that, which I inherited from my father. And my wonderful mother was always perfect in taking care of children. My mother never complained about cooking dinner. She never said, I'm tired, you do this, you know, I don't feel like it. Never. Not a single time. It's really astounding.
Right. And no, I have to second again what you said about your father, because I was very blessed also with a great father and a great mother, and everything you're saying about your parents sounds exactly what I would say about my parents. But I think, you know, one of the things that upsets me the most about this whole abortion debate is that the idea that, you know, a woman has to abort, when in fact there are so many options. You know, if a woman gets pregnant and she gets pregnant out of marriage or whatever the reason, there are options. And there are examples of people throughout history who, you know, came out of what they call unwanted pregnancy and went on to be great people. So there are, you know, if you get pregnant, there is a place for that baby. Aborting is not an option as far as I'm concerned.
Right. And you are hitting on the most important thing about my federal lawsuit. Illinois has a law a state statute that says if a woman becomes pregnant, she's single. It actually says if she's single or married, that she can abort the baby and she never has to tell her husband. She doesn't owe anybody anything. Well, the remedy I am suggesting for abortion is that a woman should be able, if she decides. For the guy's help, let's say she's in college and she gets pregnant and she knows who the guy is. I want the state laws to change to where the woman can say, tell the guy, you know what, you know, I'm pregnant and I really feel, I'm alone, I'm on my own, I have no money, I can't take care of a child. But you know what, if you're willing to pay the child care expenses, you know, the prenatal care, and if you're willing to sign, I want the states to make it where a guy can sign a document that he'll take custody of the child upon birth and support it. And I don't know why people don't have this suggestion. But we need to give women an option rather than having an abortion. For a lot of them, it's extremely impractical. And surveys show that 52% of women who have an abortion later regret it when they're older. But that's because they don't have an option. They're left out in the cold. And even if a guy wanted to contact a girl and ask her, he might get in trouble and she might call the police on him. You know what I mean? Or say she's being harassed. So, but I'm unfortunately, I have to leave it in the woman's hands because of all the rulings. But I would like women, young women, married women, to have the option to give the child away to someone. They can become like their own orphanage. You know what I mean? Their own foster child center.
Right. Well, the idea too, and go ahead, because I wanted to make a point, but go right ahead and finish what you were saying. I didn't mean to cut you off.
It will work because if young women knew that they are not alone, that they have an option. And I think I mentioned this to you before, but I have one little story, incredible story. I knew a young woman years ago, 18, 19 years ago, and after she knew me over a year and there's nobody around, she confided in me that when she was 12 years old, she was gang raped in a small city in the Midwest and that she became pregnant. And she said, I would not have an abortion. Even though she had to endure the violence of rape and gang rape, she valued the life of the child so much, she told me that she knew of a young couple, probably in their early 30s. She said they could not get pregnant. They went to all kinds of clinics, spent tens of thousands, and nothing worked. So she contacted them, and she said, I'm pregnant. And she said, I can't have a child, but I will not have an abortion. And I know you and your husband are wonderful people. You have a nice home. You have really good money. And if you are willing to take the child, I will give it to you, and here's how we'll do it. She said, what she told me, this actually happened. She said that she came to visit me in the hospital after the child was born. I was in the hospital bed. She goes, she came in the room. She goes, I went in the bathroom, took off the hospital gown, and then put on my street clothes. And she put on the hospital gown and jumped into bed. And she said, I had gone to the hospital, to the prenatal care with her name and her driver's license ID. Everything was done under her name, and we actually looked a lot alike. So she said, we just switched roles. She became the mother, and I walked out, and I never saw the baby because I didn't want to get emotionally bonded to it. Can you imagine the remarkable maturity of a 12-year-old woman to think of this and do it?
Right. No, I agree. That's an amazing story, absolutely amazing story. I do recall, I think you said it before, but it doesn't matter. It's the kind of story that should be repeated. Well, Michael, we're out of time, and I hope you had a chance to explain your cases. Is there anything that we left out that, because I know time is flying.
Well,
is there any one thing that you want to wrap up in a couple of minutes?
I would just like the courts to recognize that if the father is involved in every pregnancy, his DNA starts the pregnancy, and he should be giving an option to jump in and help take care of the child and help raise the child. Right now he can't. It's just hard to believe.
Right. I agree with you 100%, and I think one of the great tragedies of having 63 million abortions since 1973, 63 million abortions. I have always wondered how many men, would have done something. I don't know what percentage, but I think some of them would have. And how many of those 63 million babies could have been saved? And how many times does a guy even knows that the girl is pregnant? You know, there's all kinds of mysteries like that. I mean, I'm sure some men don't want to know, and I'm not trying to, I think some men encourage abortions. I read something about that the other day, about a 16-year-old girl who got pregnant by an older guy, and the guy was pushing that she get an abortion, and she said no. So, I'm not trying to say that all men would do it, but I think I have to believe that out of the 63 million abortions that we've had, I'm going to guess that maybe 20 or 30% could have been saved, maybe more, if there had been an option.
The life of one child is worth the work I've already done.
Well, I agree. I agree with you. And I think absolutely. And I think if there had been that option for the father to say, look, or the man to say, look, I'm sorry, I got you pregnant, and I know you don't want me as your husband, and it was a mistake or whatever, but I'll take the baby.
He could say, My sister can't have a child. You know, I'll give it to her. He'll be the total father, and he can give it away to anybody
he should
wants. That's what I
say. I agree with you. He should have a say on it. And unfortunately, he doesn't. Michael, I want to thank you so much for joining us. As always, always enjoy talking to you a great deal and discussing this very, very important topic. So I just want to thank you so much and keep up the great work. It's always absolutely great hearing from you.
Well, welcome. You're welcome. Thank you for having me. And it's amazing to me that my ideas are such common sense, but they have never been filed in a federal court.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Sometimes common sense is what is missing in so many things, Michael, just plain common sense. Thank you very much for being a part of our show today, Michael.
Great. Thank you for having me. It's great. I look forward to speaking with you again.
Thank you so much. Michael Vargo up in Chicago, our friend. We've had him on the show several times. Michael, at the very beginning, said we met through American Thinker, and that's correct. We met, I guess, about 10 years ago when he wrote some articles in American Thinker about the city of Chicago and the devastation and the collapse of the city of Chicago. One of the great cities in American history has just been absolutely devastated, destroyed by the policies of the Democrat Party. And that's how we first met. He wrote some articles about that. And since then, he's been very active in this abortion topic and does a great job looking at it. And I enjoy very much his readings, his writings, I should say, and having him on the show as well. Thank you very much for listening, and have a wonderful weekend. Happy Mother's Day. We'll probably do a podcast over the weekend, but anyway, happy Mother's Day. This is, well, for me, it'll be my first Mother's Day without my mom, but happy Mother's Day to all of you and to all the ladies out there. Thank you so much for being mothers and grandmothers and everything else. Thank you so much, everybody. Have a great weekend.